Hello to all my Smart Mouth friends, but especially those in Ireland this week. Y'all cracked the top five listenership by country for the first time. For reference, the top five of all time are the US, Canada, the UK, Australia, and Germany. But hey, Ireland, what's up? Everyone can find Smart Mouth on Instagram at Smart Mouth Podcast, and there is a secret group on Facebook. Just search for Smart Mouth, which is two words, and I'll let you in. I've been getting a lot more calls with guest suggestions. Thank you so much. And I have to admit, this is also a tool for me to stay sort of hip and with it and, you know, really plugged into the food world. So here's one voicemail explaining why we should have Stella Parks, aka Brave Tart, on Smart Mouth.
Hey, Catherine, this is Rachel. I'm just calling to say that my dream guest for Smart Mouth would be Stella Parks. One, she's awesome, and two, she knows so much about food history. Her cookbook is basically a textbook on the history of American desserts, and so I think it would be really awesome to know what she would pick and what she doesn't know the history of. Thanks.
I love this idea, and I bet that there's like at least one dessert out there that Stella doesn't know about, right? Here's another one. This one actually cracked me up.
Hey, this message is for Smart Mouth. I don't know specifically who it would be, but interviewing somebody at like Tasty Video where they just make like the disembodied hands making weird, ridiculously cheesy, often fried recipes, like, what is it? I fall into this crazy Instagram hole every single time, and I just want to know who is behind that and what are they doing to food. So that'd be cool.
The idea of having a guest on Smart Mouth and just being like, how come? Why? It's interesting. It could work, right? If you have any ideas for potential future guests, please call them in and leave a voicemail. The number is 209-566-2253. In Patreon news, we have some big thank yous this week. Rachel Barth increased her pledge, Andy Cardamone increased his pledge, and Jalen Eaton became a Patreon for the first time. Thank you so much. Anyone else who would like to contribute, we are at patreon.com/smartmouthpodcast. So in this episode, I got a little confused about the family behind OxyContin. It's the Sackler family, and I think that when you hear it in the episode, you'll understand my confusion. This week's guest is Miles Gray. He references his dad's art in the episode, and if you want to learn more about it, which I think you should, he's been some interesting places, go to toddgrayart.com. That's toddgrayart.com. And now, talking Mofongo with fellow but much more famous podcaster, Miles Gray. I really liked Berlin.
Yeah.
It has my stamp of approval as a destination.
Great.
Then. Which I know was important to you.
No, I haven't actually been anywhere because I've been waiting. I've only been to Japan and inside Los Angeles because I knew there was something was going to enter my life. And it's this list that you've been putting together.
Yeah. I'll tell you. There's other places you're allowed to go. I'll tell you off air. Mm-hmm. Everybody, I am giving instructions to Miles Gray. He's the co-host of the podcast Daily Zeitgeist. So I'm assuming everyone is a super fan of both of us, so.
Oh, yeah. I mean, welcome, Zeit Gang. Welcome, Smarty Mouths, you know. This is the show you've all been waiting for.
Big time.
I mean, what can I say? It feels good.
Feels good to be here. Hey, so you work in like an office, an actual office with snacks that come in.
A lot of snacks.
So many snacks.
Some might say too many.
It's kind of an offensive level of snacks.
It's like a very appropriate amount for an American office where like, you know, Pepperidge Farm fucking goldfish are like in the toilet even. They're just overflowing. People don't know what to do with them.
My goodness.
I love goldfish though. But I'm like, I can't really eat a lot of the snacks because like as I get older, I'm just like trying to minimize my exposure to like terrible health.
Right.
But I still drink Kern's Nectars.
Well, it's a nectar.
Pure, like 9,000 grams of sugar in like one can. So
those things are horrifying.
If you ever look at actually how many grams, it's like
right.
It's
Like, and you know it's tricking people. Because it looks like an alternative to soda.
Thick, and it's like, this has to be basically a mango that was just put into a can. And it's like, without a bunch of high fructose corn syrup. But like, who are we to judge or know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So is it weird for you to record a podcast in an apartment?
It's not weird. It just feels inappropriate.
Really?
Yeah. Just very like, ooh, like, what is this? But I mean, this is a nice apartment. So I'll give you that. No, I mean, it's. I've only done podcasts not in a studio before.
Oh, okay.
Prior to that,
okay.
So doing it like professionally, it felt like more pressure in a way.
I can see that
because it's like way more formal. But yeah, as we do the show, like it's just second. Now I've completely gotten over all that shit.
Yeah. How long have you been doing the show?
So we started we technically had the first episode in October of 2017. So like.
Yeah.
18 months or so.
Are you a good cook?
I like to cook. I'm good at following recipes.
Mm-hmm.
There are certain things I can just make without recipes.
Mm-hmm.
I like instructions.
Yeah.
But I used to work on Hell's Kitchen, that Gordon Ramsay show.
Uh-huh.
So I definitely learned a lot of technique from being near Chef Ramsay screaming at people. Like, yeah, like I didn't realize how many terrible cooking habits I had. Like of like not letting meat rest before you cook it, like from the refrigerator.
Okay.
Or like making sure the pan is hot enough or not crowding a pan.
Yeah.
Things like that. So I definitely, before I was always like cooking, like, damn, this chicken is not cooking. I'm like, I just took it out the refrigerator. And I'm like, oh, right. Cause it's 30 degrees.
Yeah.
Like internally. And it's just like fighting it in the pan the whole time.
So did you really learn just by overhearing his shrieking?
It's not that I learned, but like. I was never really taught formally how to cook.
Mm-hmm.
So I just like the lessons I had from cooking were like thinking about like watching my parents cook,
mm-hmm.
but they were never like, okay, get the pot, the pan hot.
Yeah.
Or like, don't burn this garlic first. It was just more like, oh yeah. And then like garlic goes in and I would just sort of think like, those are like the first recipes I made when I was like living on my own of like kind of half putting things together in my mind.
Right.
So,
right.
But I think I learned more of like, the technique of cooking from hearing him like rip people's heads off.
Well, that's one way to learn.
Yeah. And it was dope too, because like every, you know, like, I don't know if you're familiar with the show. There's like a lot of cooking challenges.
Mm-hmm.
So the show would have to buy insane amounts of like produce and product for like these challenges. At the end of an episode, they'd be like, all right, extra product out here. And like, you know, there would be days like I came home with like a fucking garbage bag full of shishito peppers because like no one was taking them. Like, I know what to do with those or like meat or whatever. But wow. It was always fun. Yeah. Like sometimes you get real lucky and like there would be really good shit. But usually the higher up producers, like
they'd get in there first.
They would get in there first. And like lowly like APs, PAs were like, is there corn? Can I get a corn cob?
That's mean. You guys were the ones who couldn't afford the good stuff.
Yeah. And
they should have let you go in first.
And I had a college degree and I'm picking up fucking confetti by hand off the floor to clean up a set.
You know what? I think around our age, people around our age who went to college, I think we learned pretty quickly that we're like, oops, maybe didn't need to do that necessarily.
Yeah.
And it's weird because people our age, at least in LA, don't have teenagers.
Right.
But everyone that I know who talks about it theoretically is like, if I had a teenager right now, I feel like I wouldn't even insist that they go to college.
Yeah. I mean, I guess so. I mean, like when I think about the jobs I've had, it's never been like, do you have a degree?
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm sure that probably weighs in like when you apply for a job, like if they look at a resume, it's more of like an indicator that to some, it communicates to the employer that maybe this person has a minimum level of whatever they're thinking about. But at the same time, like I worked with people who went to college and were like absolutely terrible at their job.
Right.
So it's more of like a class barrier to entry than like a,
oh, that's
really just all it is.
Yes.
Now.
Yes.
But I guess the only reason like I think about it more like, I don't know, optimistically or something is because like I remember a lot of the stuff I was taught,
mm-hmm.
and I really liked what I was studying. So in that sense, I was like, well, I got that knowledge, but then I think, am I using it? No. But it could be also just the exposure, you know, being around people who you're not used to being around, which is also, I think, the benefit.
Well, but that's why I think that it doesn't really matter what you major in.
Yeah.
In the liberal arts, the humanities, because you're mostly learning how to think.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's good. But if your goal is to get a job, then I don't know that like college, right. The degree in and of itself.
Right. Especially if you're like trying to work in production or something.
Yeah.
Like, don't. If that's what you're trying to do, you can start right away.
Yeah.
Just start, you know, apprenticing, PAing, whatever. Learn about set. Move your way up if you want to keep doing that.
Exactly.
It's a grind, though.
Everything's a grind.
Mm-hmm.
Even podcasting is a grind.
I know.
Surprise.
Can I go? It's like, ugh, such a grind.
So, of your food choices, mm-hmm. The one that stood out to me the most was the mofongo.
Mm-hmm.
Am I pronouncing that right?
Yeah, mofongo, yeah.
Okay. I'm pronouncing it West Coasty.
Yeah, sure.
And that one stuck out to me because aren't you from LA?
Yeah.
And we don't have a lot of Caribbean food on the West Coast.
Nope.
So I was like, well, where do you have that?
Yeah.
So tell me, where do you have that?
Oh, well, the first time I had it was in New York.
Okay.
Because, yeah, it's Puerto Rican food.
Right.
So I was like, someone told me like, yo, you want to go get them? I'm like, what the fuck is that? And they described it to me. I'm like, mashed up plantains with like pork rinds and like stewed meat on top. I'm like, this in my mind, I pictured a mess.
Mm-hmm.
Cut to, it is a mess,
mm-hmm.
but it's the most delicious mess you could eat. And I think I really liked it because growing up, I did not like plantains at all. Like I wasn't into having sweet stuff or whatever, but this isn't like a sweet plantain. It's definitely more of like your carb
mm-hmm.
in it for the, you know, it's binding with the pork rinds. And it captivated me. I don't know what it was. It was like the mixture of the plantain with the pork rinds and the crunch of that. It was just an experience I wasn't really used to because, yeah, growing up in LA, like I know all about Salvadoran food. I know all about Mexican food.
Yeah.
Like Armenian food, Korean food.
Yeah.
I mean, we have like everything, Thai food, but like, yeah, we don't have really as big of a Puerto Rican community as like on the East Coast, especially in the Atlantic seaboard.
Yeah.
To use a technical term. And so I think it was exotic to me too.
Yeah.
And then I like came back here and I found like a couple places that had it and I was like, here we fucking go.
Interesting.
Like, yeah,
is it as good? Can you get it as good on the West Coast as in New York?
It wasn't as good, but it is definitely comparable. Like I had one that was not good.
Yeah.
Or just didn't feel like it had love in it. And then there's another place in North Hollywood called Mofongos.
Oh.
That I think is okay. I mean, it's never going to compare, but, you know, they have a good idea what they're doing. And
yeah.
I've been able to convert people with that too.
When okay.
I'm like, have you had Mofongo? And they're like, what's that? I'm like, sit back. What do you like? What kind of protein you want? And then get into it. Because you can put anything in there. You can fried
yes.
chicken, a steak.
Yes.
It's just
they'll
a great
allow
vehicle.
Anything.
Yeah.
Which is kind of great. Side note, so Mofongo is Puerto Rican, but I guess the Dominican Republic gets into it real hard
yes.
too.
Yes, okay, sorry. Yes, don't mean to put in a box.
Oh, no, not at all. I was just a little side note. Los Angeles does not have even one Dominican restaurant in it.
Really?
Yeah. Isn't that bonkers? Not even one.
Wow.
It's funny because we have almost everything.
Yeah.
But when it comes to the Caribbean, we're like, what?
Well, that's like the trade-off, right? Like New York has their certain foods that
yeah.
we don't have here and vice yeah. versa. I mean, they're trying to do tacos, but...
No, it's so humiliating. I went to a Mexican restaurant in Brooklyn and they had Cubanos on the menu. And I was like, nope.
What are you doing?
That's yeah. not even...
I went to a taqueria and I was like, hey, you got radishes? And they're like, what? And I'm like, get me out of here.
Because oh.
you have jarritos.
Yeah.
And some like Topo Chico, you're really out here back flexing like this is a taqueria with no radishes. I have to go. And it's funny, I have friends who are from LA who like are transplants now in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And every time I go, they're like, no, this time I found the Mexican spot. Like, you're going to love it. And I'm like, all right. And then we go and I'm like, I'm going to have to take your LA card from you.
Yeah.
Because you have been in this hostile land for too long. You
yeah.
forgot what Mexican food tastes like.
Probably.
But in the same way, yeah, we don't have Dominican food.
Yeah.
We have a couple places that do Puerto Rican food.
Yeah.
Definitely have Cuban food.
We have
There's a Colombian
bit.
Spot near me that I go to,
mm-hmm.
La Maria.
Oh.
That's pretty good.
Okay.
Their arroz con pollo is delicious.
Nice.
Yeah, and we really do have everything else.
Yeah.
Like Brazilian, Argentinian food. But yeah, the Caribbean, There's actually a couple decent Jamaican places.
There are some Jamaican places. Yeah. That's true. But it's interesting. I mean, I'm always bragging on LA. But then when I found out that there's a type of restaurant that we don't have, I was like, yeah. Oh, God. Come how on. Embarrassing.
De lo mio personal. Come through with the Dominican spots.
It would be good. That's the thing is I bet a Dominican restaurant would do so well, at least in the first 6 months, because everyone would want to try
whoa,
it.
Whoa, what is this? Yeah. Pernil? Like, cool.
Oh, man. So to talk about the history of mofongo, we do have to talk about the transatlantic slave trade.
Yeah, please tell me. This is funny because even though I listed my favorite foods, I'm like, this is one I'm totally arrogant or ignorant of, like the history context. Mm-hmm. I'm just like, it's that really good shit I had in New York.
Yeah.
I cannot stop eating it here. And I love every incarnation of it. So, of course, a dark side.
Of course. This is like I've said this on the show before. The more you know about food, the more guilty you feel about eating any of it.
Right.
Because there's always something bad going on with it. But we also have to talk about like the agriculture of the transatlantic trade overall.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that in America, when we talk about that, the triangle trade and all that stuff, we really think about it, or it's framed in terms of Europeans pushing it all,
mm-hmm.
or the white people who became Americans pushing it all. So we look at it from a really narrow frame of reference and really erasing the things that the brown people did, essentially.
No.
I know. I don't mean to blow your mind.
That's weird. Undercutting the achievements and contributions of brown people in historical. Okay, this is a lot to take on.
I know,
yeah,
right?
This is all very new for me.
New ideas. Yeah, yeah. I'm so sorry. We can take a break if you need to.
Ooh. Okay, never know. I'm going to keep it together.
So this, of course, ignores the fact that people coming from Africa were bringing things with them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that because we think about the horrors of the slave trade, which is absolutely true, I don't think we think about enslaved people bringing things with them.
Right. We picture people like being just middle passage, just dying on the bottom of a boat,
mm-hmm.
and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Like everybody's just chained up.
Right.
And without, yeah. Right.
Right. Which was probably largely true.
Oh, yes.
And we don't want to forget that part.
Yeah, right, right.
But
let's not forget they're smugglers.
Right, exactly. But here's what's cool.
There's actually a lighter side to this.
Yeah, ha ha ha. No, actually, enslaved people did bring a lot of agricultural items with mm-hmm. them. And they brought them in the form of seeds to the New World. So not only were they bringing the items, but also the knowledge of what to do with these things, especially because it's in seed form. So the Europeans were like, I don't know what any of this is when they planted it or anything. So here's apparently this story is like so good. I feel like it's fake, except for there was enough sources for it that I was like, okay, I guess if all these intellectuals are saying
okay, go on. You have my interest.
That it's the women who would hide the seeds in their hair.
Wow.
And that's one of the origins of like elaborate hairstyles and a lot of braids. They'd like put a line of seeds in their part and then braid through it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Damn. I feel like a terrible black person for not knowing that.
I
know. Wow.
It was pretty obscure.
That makes sense. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And it's so weird. Like every time when I was reading it and thinking about it now, I like tear up.
Yeah.
And it's because it's like, that's so amazing that they did that. But like, they had to do that because humanity is so awful.
Right. That you're innovating your hairstyles as a means of like bringing something from your life you've been ripped away from.
I know. I know.
Yeah.
Totally awful.
Yeah.
And apparently it continued. This is depressing, but we have to talk about it. It continued in the Americas because when women's children were being stolen from them to be sold to other plantations, they would plant seeds in their kids' hair too. Plant seeds. Seeds in there too. So it's a tradition that carried on in the Americas as well.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing? I thought it was amazing.
How many different like crops were they bringing over?
A lot. So there were all kinds of grains. There's like sorghum and there's millet and there's also a ton of rice in Africa
mm-hmm.
that's been there since like almost prehistoric. I mean, not that old, like ancient times, like 3,000 years ago. So it's essentially a native crop mm-hmm. to Africa at this point. So there was rice. There were a bunch of peppers, a bunch of melons, okra, a bunch of legumes, including black-eyed peas.
Okay.
And then a ton of plants that are actually used to make cooking oil.
Okay.
Yeah. So there's just like a lot of ingredients that came directly from Africa to the Americas.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we don't think about
anything
that wasn't brought over by the European explorers. Yeah. Which,
well, that's the problem of living in a country that hasn't fully had a reckoning with its past.
I think slavery. I remember in elementary school, there was some hubbub about reparations.
Mm-hmm.
And then it kind of went away. And I feel like this year I'm hearing more about it.
Yeah, I mean, the cynical read is they're virtue signaling to black voters to try and be like, hey, I hear y'all. Mm-hmm. But a lot of candidates have talked about it. But it's like one of those things of like, I think Obama was like, nah, I don't really know about it. I don't know how we get it done. I think he really did say, like, when he was campaigning, that it was just a little too complicated.
It does seem pretty complicated.
I mean, yeah, because how do you take into account systemic oppression that's existed for centuries and try and like translate that into something that will be of benefit to African American people in this country as a means to get them out of this system of oppression? There's so many levels. Like, you'd have to dismantle so many programs and policies, that are oppressive, to try and make at first just an equal, have everyone have equal footing in the eyes of the law or banks or whatever. And then how do you then make up for it? Yeah, it's just a lot of people have said, we support the idea, but not many people have had an actual like
plan.
Mm-hmm. And I think Elizabeth Warren said, you know, she was very concerned about like racist bank lending,
mm-hmm.
and making people, or increasing the ability for African Americans to purchase homes and avoid, you know, like all the redlining and things mm-hmm. like that. So that's one way. But I don't know how you can really holistically translate the 40 acres and a mule that we forgot to give y'all back then to what that is now.
Yeah.
I mean, shit, if you gave every black person 40 acres of land, that might work.
That would be something.
It's property.
Yeah. Yeah. It sure is. That's an interesting idea.
But I just don't
know
where you have that. You know what I mean? Like, but there is no, it's different when, you know, the country's still developing. Like,
I know.
We're going to get 40 acres. Like, it's on the Mojave Desert.
Well, essentially, yeah.
Or like these, like, you know, national parks. But I think, yeah, it's an important thing to have a dialogue around, because even if these candidates can't come to some kind of actual solution, the conversation itself is good because it begins the process of at least recognizing that reparations have not been made.
Well, I feel like the biggest pushback I hear about it is comes from this very American idea that the pie is small and finite, and that if someone else gets something, then that means you didn't get something. But I don't think that's true. I think the pie is infinite and everyone can have something.
Oh, yeah.
But that's not a very American way of thinking, or traditionally it hasn't been.
No, everything's a zero-sum game.
Right.
Like, when it comes to like helping people, it's like, well, that's how people even look at like immigrant populations. Where it's like, mm-hmm. well, they're here. They're the reason why I lost my plant job.
Right.
And it's like,
love doing that.
You've been conditioned mm-hmm. because someone who is richer than you, it doesn't want to you to realize that they are the person that has actually made, you know, disenfranchised you. But yeah, I mean, I can totally see that, because the pushback is going to be from a lot of people who aren't really interested in any kind of nuanced discussion about systemic oppression or racism, to mm-hmm. immediately just jump to like, well, hey, I can fucking do anything. Where's my fucking money?
Yeah.
Not to, you know, put everybody in that box.
Well, but
you know, the voices I've heard typically are people who have like stars and bars in their Twitter avatar.
Yeah,
like
absolutely.
That. But yeah, and I think, sure, that's fine. You can feel like that. But then that's where I feel like people need to understand that is completely coming from a place of either they're actually just racist and they don't care.
Mm-hmm.
Or some people, I think, are ignorant and like, ignorant in the sense that there are some people who are kind of like Michael Scott kind of racists who are like uh-huh. well-intentioned.
Uh-huh.
But if you really explain to them, they're like, oh,
yeah,
right. Okay.
But it's exhausting.
I don't know how many people are actually like have that kind of benign ignorance either, too.
I don't know. I feel like maybe certain older people that I know have that benign ignorance.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think, yeah, I think the only way to overcome people pushing back is for them to understand where it is. But it's, yeah, it's just such a complicated issue because the solution isn't even clear.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But I think they're, at a minimum, you can do a lot. You don't have to call it reparations, but you can really begin to dismantle like the system that...
God, well, maybe they just need a rebrand.
Yeah,
and more right. people would be into yeah. it because we've been hearing about reparations for too long. And like older people are like, no, I said no in the 80s. So that means I still feel that way.
Right, exactly. And it's like, well, they seem to be doing fine. I saw a man with a mouthful of diamonds. I don't think he needs money. It's like, okay.
Oh, my goodness.
But yeah, well, you know, I'm glad this is a show about reparations. You know, let's yeah. keep talking about this.
Yeah, absolutely.
Preparations for reparations.
We can talk about it all day, but I could also tell you about the Cola Net.
Oh, please.
So it's spelled K-O-L-A, and it's the original star ingredient of the beverage, Coca-Cola. The guy who invented it, he's like, I'm going to throw a little Cola Nut in there.
Not just cocaine?
Not just cocaine.
Right.
Yeah.
He's like, this is... My jaw is out of control when I drink this and there's no flavor. My mouth is numb.
I got to zhuzh it up a little.
Everyone's throat's all numb. Ugh. God.
Wow, you're really good at the impersonation of the Coke
Look,
drip.
I've lived a rich life, you know, and my wheelhouse is, there's a lot in there.
Yeah,
there's a
yeah.
lot in that wheelhouse.
That's great. It's great to have experiences, mm-hmm. I always say.
Yeah. I'm doing a one-man show. It's just me, like my jaw going crazy, and that's it. Just facial performance art.
Can I offer you a note?
Sure.
What if you expanded it and did the whole range of drugs? And just
right.
the physical reactions to said
like
drugs.
The Evolution of Dance viral video from back
yeah.
in the day.
Yeah.
Like,
yes.
Like how gurning your face from cocaine turns into like a Molly peak and you're like into a dab. Yeah. Okay.
It's you
get
it, right?
Would be about a 45 second show. But
yeah. No, and incredibly boring for everyone. but people would buy tickets for at least
yeah,
one night.
I'm in LA. Yes.
Yeah. So I've heard the story of like Coca-Cola's invention before, mm-hmm. and it's sort of, I feel like it's like, and then the Cola Nut is in there. But here's the thing,
mm-hmm.
is that in West Africa, the Cola Nut for forever has been known to somehow magically, scientifically, which means magically to me, it keeps water fresh. So I'm wondering if there's something about the guy who invented Coca-Cola who like put it in there to like keep the liquid from going stale or something
what
like this.
What do you mean keeps water fresh?
I literally don't know. Here's what I know is
right.
that
it's just the phrase like keeps you fresh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Don't question me.
But how?
It's the original Mentos.
Yeah,
deal
right.
with it.
The Fresh Fighter. Or that's the Foo Fighters video I'm thinking of.
That's so cute.
Futos, the Fresh
yes.
Fighter. And that was that Big Me. Yeah. Anyway. It's my 90s brain.
So you could put it, if you put a Cola Nut in your container of water when you're, say, a nomadic person,
mm-hmm.
it would keep the water from getting that like stale flavor.
Oh,
it would
weird.
Keep it tasting fresh. And so that is a knowledge and an ingredient that the enslaved people had on the boats coming over to the New World. So they put the Cola Nuts in the barrels of water that were on board. On these slave ships.
Oh, wow.
And then, of course, the Europeans, like, adapted that, too. Some
huh.
of them.
And
not
that's
all
how
of them.
The Brita Water Filter Company was
that's
born.
Exactly.
Of course. Damn it.
I thought that was fascinating, and I want someone to... I'm sure someone has already figured out the Coca-Cola thing and why.
Yeah. Did he just leave it too long, and then it turned brown? And
oh
he's like, God. Ah, darn it. All right, I'll take a sip. Oh.
Delicious.
Yeah, like, I think I stumbled onto something.
I think that the color was from cocoa and wine.
Mm.
Sorry. I can't let anyone have any fun.
Cocoa and wine?
Yeah.
There's wine in it?
There was.
What the fuck was Coca-Cola then? This is so fascinating to me. I mean, I just know the use of coca leaves or whatever, but wine?
It was to get you fucked up.
Oh, so it was like weird party fuel.
If I'm remembering correctly, the wine might have been to counteract the cocaine.
Oh, shit.
She could just put less cocaine in the drink.
Yeah, but then the ideas aren't flowing as much.
But it was like, yeah, an upper and a downer together as one.
Your heart will thank you later.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's kind of wild. You know, we have the FDA and everything, and we think about like the 1890s as being like snake oil central, mm-hmm. and you could just give people cocaine. But I don't necessarily trust drug makers of today anymore.
Yeah, I mean, they make a lot of money.
They really wild out.
And like, we're not like, oh, you make opioids? Oh, and you also make the thing that will help opioid overdoses?
Yep.
Huh.
Yep. Yep.
Can we do something? Is that being weird? Is that weird to anybody?
Is that called a closed system?
Yeah. Well, we don't like to. Come on now. Don't make it hot. You know what I mean? Shout out to Purdue Pharmaceuticals. You know, one of my greatest sponsors, the makers of
so much
OxyContin. And I think they're trying to get into like the Narcan game too.
Which is despicable. And yeah. That family, I can't remember
the Purdue
their name.
Family.
It's the name that starts with an S, isn't it?
Well. Oh, maybe, but Purdue is the maker of Oxy.
Yes, yes.
And then, yeah, that's right.
It's like the Salkers or something like that. I mean, that's too close to the guy who invented the polio vaccine, yeah. So not that.
Oh, Jonas Salk?
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
I'm just getting real confused, but some emails got leaked about the family being like, hey, I feel like we might actually get in trouble for the opioid thing at this point, so let's figure out the cure.
When you look at that video of like OxyContin that they dropped in like 97 or whatever when they first brought it to market. And it was like what they showed doctors or people like, you know, I had a spinal injury and nothing worked. And now with OxyContin, like I can manage my day and I've never felt better. And like the people they had for the testimonials, like something like 70% of them had died. Like that were in the original like promo video. It's not like, I don't know if it's 70%, but a substantial amount of the talking head patients that they used for the promo video when they first rolled it out, eventually, like I think were like, had passed away due to opioid addiction.
That's crazy.
It's dark, yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I have a friend a couple of years younger than me, and she's a upper middle class white blonde girl from New Jersey, and she broke her leg in like three places and she was put on Oxy, and she maintains to this day that she would have become an addict if she hadn't already signed up to go teach English in Korea and like had to leave the country.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, yeah, I mean, depending on like your body chemistry and your psychology, like you could become dependent like after fucking 2 days.
Yeah.
3 days or something.
She said that she was a raging bitch anytime she wasn't on it. Oof. Until she like basically detoxed on the plane.
Oh, wow.
Can you imagine?
I'm like, yeah, you're sitting next to one on the plane. Like, do you want me to put air conditioner nozzle towards you too? You are sweating up a storm. I'm sorry, what? Your insides are burning?
Gee, I'm sorry about that. That sounds awful.
Can I have your dinner? Are you going to eat that?
I feel like you're not going to eat it. Can I at least have your mint?
I had the chicken. It's so dry. I'm going to just take this. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
Oh, my goodness.
Ugh, you got the vegetarian meal. Never mind.
Yeah, yuck. It was this kosher.
Although, depending on the flights, like if you're on an Asian airline, the vegetarian meal is usually pretty good.
Really?
Yeah, like sometimes we get like Indian food or other things. Yeah.
Okay. I'm trying to remember my flights. I don't think I remember the goodness of the food, but I do know that on ANA, they just like come bring you cup noodle like every 2 hours.
Yeah. And, like, you
everyone's just like slurping ramen the whole time.
It's the fuel of my people.
Yeah. Yeah.
And something, and my mom, like I grew up eating cup noodles all the time. Like, you know, we would hack it. We would put a little lemon in there.
Yeah.
The lemon in the chicken one or the shrimp one.
That sounds delightful.
Might as well be eating that fucking Bouchon.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's weird how good it is because I grew up mostly in the suburbs, so we were a big Costco family, naturally. And you get the huge pallets of ramen, and then you get the already cooked barbecue chicken.
Oh, yeah.
And then you just slice up that, put it in the soup.
Wow.
And you feel like you made a gourmet meal.
Damn, I was literally only grabbing a lemon from my backyard because we had a tree, and I was just like, squeeze that shit in there. It makes the broth kick a little bit harder. Maybe some cilantro. That was the other thing we put in.
Amazing.
Cilantro. Yo, so lemon and cilantro in your cup noodle, you could bust that thing wide open.
God, not only does that sound good, but I'm like filling up with like SoCal pride with that. I love that. That makes me so
happy.
We're
out here. We're like, okay, what do we have around here? Got a lemon. Okay, we love cilantro. Okay. Yeah.
It's like, turns out Mexican and East Asian food goes together real well.
Yeah, who'd have thought?
Everyone who lives here.
Yeah. Hey. Also, very total side note. A lot of Japanese speakers and Spanish speakers they're very good at interchanging languages, like from a pronunciation standpoint.
What?
Yeah, because like in Japanese, like we kind of roll our R's.
Oh.
So like the R rolling is very easy for Japanese people. And then for Spanish the other way, it's like, oh yeah, they can get like.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay.
Because I heard, like, you know, one of my mom's friends who's like trilingual, whatever, polyglot, was like, I heard her speaking Spanish. Like, before I had met her, I overheard it. I was like, oh, is she like a Spanish speaking Japanese? Like, did she grow up in Mexico or something? Uh-huh. And she didn't. She just learned in college, but her accent was like on point.
That's amazing. Yeah. Do you speak Japanese?
I do.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Do you speak Spanish?
I speak, you know, like any LA person. Like, I know enough to get down. I know enough to get killed.
Be careful.
I can say enough to get me killed. I can say enough to get me fed.
Yeah. And that's all you need. That's the circle of life. And a little Tagalog
too. You know, gotta know.
Yeah.
You gotta know phrases. I know, like, because, like, I have, you know, a lot of friends that of all walks growing up in LA. So, you know, I know a little Armenian, a little Tagalog. My whole thing is, if I learned Armenian, Russian, and Korean and Spanish, I would be good in every neighborhood.
Yes. In this city. And, like, so true. They would be
like, if I remember the one time I used a little bit of, like, Hangul, like Korean.
Yeah.
And people were like, oh my God. And I was like, I'd try, you know. All I said was hello, but, you know, I'm out here.
That's so cool. That actually is really cool.
I mean, that's kind of the beauty of the city. Oh, yeah. Thai too, if you could speak Thai, because the Valley, North Hollywood,
yeah,
is where it's at right now.
I mean, and all of this would be in the service of grubbing.
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
Because, like, also, like, that's what I love about, you know, restaurants too, where it's authentic. Like, you kind of get an idea of the hospitable nature of, like, the cultures too. Mm-hmm. And if you even try with a little, you know, Tagalog, oh, gutom na ako. I mean, you're hungry. Then they're like, oh my God, they come through.
And that's a really good tip.
Oh yeah. If you can say, like, this was delicious.
Yeah.
Or like, I'm so hungry. Like, when you're about to order, they would go, hey, what?
Aww.
What are you talking there? I'm like, hey. You know, I love the language, baby. Now, please overfill my plate.
Yeah, which they probably will, because they just appreciate the effort. Oh, everyone just appreciates effort.
Yeah. That's always my favorite thing about, like, restaurants. If, like, you can tell, like, they hooked you up.
Yeah.
Like, with, like, a, like, ridiculous portion.
Yeah.
Yes. Also, that's why I like to order from barbecue places late at night, because usually they're trying to get rid of their shit. And then, like, your quarter pound order of brisket, they might be like, yo, we got to get rid of this brisket. And I'm like, look at that.
That hit me with a half pound. A dang pro tip.
Oh, yeah. Like, Uber Eats, the, like, if you're, like, the last order, I've seen a lot of the times when you hit that, like, DoorDash, whatever, if you're last order, and it's something that's, like, typically, like, something that has to be fresh every day, at the end of the day, like, sometimes you will be on the receiving end of a tremendous bounty.
I love that.
Yeah.
That is good to know.
Yeah.
That is excellent. Mofongo is a descendant of fufu. Are you familiar with fufu?
Yes, I've had fufu when I was in Ghana.
You've been to Ghana?
Yes, I've been to Ghana.
Tell me more. Tell me everything.
My dad is a photographer, and he takes a lot of, like, you know, celebrity photographs, and he was on tour with Stevie Wonder in Africa.
Wow.
And he went to a few different countries, but he was in Ghana, and he loved it, and he was like, I want to live here at some point.
Yeah.
And years later, he built, like, a eco home, like, in a remote fishing village in Ghana, and was, like, an art studio for him and his wife. And yeah, I've been out there and just chilling, no electricity.
Yeah.
But, like, we have, like, you know, composting toilet, like a water poly tank we'd have to get filled.
Mm-hmm.
And then just, like, eating with locals, basically. And that's for the first time I had fufu. Wait, we're talking about fufu, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, watching people make fufu is, like, wild. But the communal aspect of eating fufu is what really kind of, like, opened my mind. Because I'm not going to lie, like, going to Africa for my first time, I had a lot of fucking dumb shit in my head about what I thought Africa was going to be as an American, as an African-American, you know, just, like, I don't know, is it going to be weird? Like, is it, like, dangerous? Like, are there going to be, like, animals that eat? You know, it's just, like, ignorant shit you have. And then I'm there, and it's just, like, it was so different than what, you know, what my preconceived notions were, that, like, I just was overcome with guilt at first, that I was like, how could I be so, like, close-minded? Like, this is, like, a beautiful place, and the people are so warm and, like, generous. So, like, fufu, like, you just have, like, the starch, like, in the middle of a bowl, and everyone just is around the same thing. Take off your little piece, dip it, and then, you know, just eat that shit. And yeah, I like fufu a lot.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
it's like mochi a little bit, you know?
It completely is. Yeah. You just pound the bejesus out of a starch until you get the desired consistency. Yeah. And you're talking about like breaking off a little piece. That's like the edible scooper that you use.
Yeah. And then you kind of use that. Right. Exactly.
Yeah. That's such a cool idea.
Yeah.
I love the mochi fufu connection.
It's, that's why I was like, do mochi fufu? By David Chang?
Yeah, don't give him that idea. Capitalize on
dude,
it.
Dude, Ghanaian Japanese mashup restaurant? Whoa.
I feel like that could work.
Yeah.
Why not? Do you watch Top Chef?
I haven't watched the last few seasons, but I definitely was a Top Chef, avid Top Chef watcher.
Okay, yeah. So one of the contestants on this most recent season, his name is Eric Ajipong, and his family is from Ghana. Like, even his older sister was born there. They must have like moved to America right before he was born.
Okay.
He came in third, and it caused a lot of chaos because it was him and two white Southern women, and they were cooking Southern food. And he had said at the beginning that what he wanted his final meal to be was the transatlantic slave trade as seen through food. And then he got the boot, and then two white women just cooked Southern food.
Wow.
So Twitter was real angry about that.
The producer's like, what's wrong? Oh, God. Okay.
It is. It's a thing. It's interesting to think about. And one of the things, I can't remember if I thought of this or someone else did and I read it, but like, if all of the judges judging something have very similar backgrounds in terms of food. And Padma is Indian, but like, she's lived in America for a long time. And I think that a lot of white Americans are more familiar with Indian food than African food,
for sure.
Surely. That the idea of being like, well, I didn't understand these flavors together. That doesn't mean they were wrong. It could just mean that you don't know about
it. Yeah, your palate is... You actually just turned out your palate for the first time.
Yeah.
Wasn't used to that. Right.
Yeah. I thought that was such an interesting thing to think about.
Well, and then living in America too, like every country, right? Like, foreign foods tend to typically get filtered through whatever the palate is of that country, and you get a kind of slightly different version when you go there. I mean, certain foods stay the same, but like, some things kind of evolve over time into something that is a little more like attuned to flavors.
Well, when Pad Thai was first introduced to American audiences, it was before like tamarind was widely available. Right. So the people cooking it would just use ketchup for the color.
All right, whatever.
You make do,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, you do what you got to do.
Yeah.
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 And I think, for people, look, if you want to get into African food, there's so many good African food things. I mean, especially in LA, hit up Little Ethiopia.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And yo, I think the gateway African food for me was jollof rice.
Okay.
The Ivory Coast dish, or I mean, Nigerian, everyone eats it, but
everyone claims it, right?
Yeah, everyone claims it. A lot of people when I was in Ghana, like, who are from Cote d'Ivoire, were like, no, this is from Ivory Coast. I'm like, all right. I know you agree too, Matilda. But yeah, I think that was a great introduction. I'm like, okay, rice and spicy. Yes. Because I love hot food.
Okay.
So it was delicious. Yes.
Okay. That makes sense. So in Western Africa, fufu is usually made from yams, but sometimes it's combined with plantains.
Right.
And also, a quick point, if anyone's confused about the difference between yams and sweet potatoes, check out my previous episode called Sweet Potatoes, because we lay it out.
Oh, okay.
So as you said, you just smash them to heck. And then other parts of Africa have really similar dishes.
Yeah.
But it's kind of just like whatever is the main starch.
Yeah, like they might use cassava or something.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, you move inward a little bit, like it's cassava. And then East Africa, I guess, mostly does it with corn. So it's always called something different. But the reason why mofongo, et cetera, are descendants of fufu is because fufu is the West African one, and that's where most of the enslaved people were brought from.
So and Ghana too. I mean, like, I went to a few of like the castles that were like sort of the export points, and it's haunting. Like, the energy there is like, it's not like a place, like any place where terrible shit went down, like it leaves its mark there. And it's really chilling because it's like, it's sort of picturesque, like right on the coast,
right,
looking off like into the infinity of the Atlantic. And you're like, oh, just being in like what the path is to the boats or whatever. You're just sort of like, it's a very moving experience for sure.
Did you know that you were going to be visiting those sites?
Yeah, because my dad, you know, that's one of the reasons why he really liked Ghana was the history. And he's just, a lot of his art has to do with mental colonialism, you know, anti-blackness within black people, just all kinds of, you know, heavy shit mm-hmm. having to do with identity in the diaspora. So yeah, he very much wanted that to be like a thing. He's like, we can't come here without like standing in this place.
Interesting.
Where people took that journey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I am weak and don't ever want to go to any of the concentration camps. Mm-hmm. You know, people go visit Auschwitz yeah. on purpose. And I've always been like, no.
Yeah.
No, thank you. I've heard what happened.
Yeah.
That's enough for me.
I mean, yeah, just reading or like, yeah, there's no every depiction of it, even from the history or whatever. It I feel like that would be kind of, I don't know why. I think I maybe felt a duty to go.
Yeah.
In Africa.
I mean, I get it. I'm mostly just talking about like how weak and soft I am.
Well, that's fine. Have you? Oh, you know what's a fun game? Not a fun game, but really terrible to see. Like, you know how there's that Holocaust memorial sculpture? I think it's in Berlin mm-hmm. of like the different blocks of different sizes. If you look at the location tag, the amount of like zany photos people take there, it's absurd. Like people don't even know. Like, what the fuck it is?
Yeah, did they, like, miss the plaque in the front or something?
I'm not joking. Hold on. Let me just go on my phone, because I actually screenshotted a bunch of them.
Really?
Months ago, I was, like, high and, like, with some people, and, like, I was just thinking about just that. I remember there was, like, a thing of people doing, like, yoga poses on them, like, a few months ago, and it was, like, kind of this big controversy. Just kind of go through these. The captions are so, like...
What a Time to Be Alive by Drake.
Yeah.
Are just they kidding?
A quote. And you're standing in front of a Holocaust memorial and you're like, what a time to be alive, Drake.
But I...
this is what I'm talking about.
What?
People are so disconnected from history.
Okay, and here's the thing. You could almost say like, oh, maybe these people didn't know what they were, but they all location tagged it.
Yeah.
And it says memorial to the yeah. murder Jews of Europe.
Yeah.
People are wild.
Social media just like fucking bums me out.
Yeah.
Like,
wow. Definitely.
It's like, you think, oh, this is a grammable spot.
Yeah.
Oh, hashtag respect to the lost souls. But do my biceps look pretty pumped? Should I do three more push ups to get it kind of get the pump going? Yeah. Anyway.
It's so weird.
I digress. But yeah, it is tough to be in those places for sure.
Yeah.
But it connects you, I think, also a lot too. But you know, if you're like an empath or something, I can see how it could be very overwhelming, because, you know, I've yeah. been to like the Hiroshima like bomb site, and that's another place that is very eerie.
Man, you got a real combo between your two peoples.
Yeah, right.
People going through it.
But now, alas, I'm here. You know
yeah,
what I mean? Blink
I
of an eye. Cut to 2019. Podcasting, and we're having a good time. Matilda's farting, and we're yeah. just, it's what a time to be
I'm
alive.
I'm so Drake. Sorry. She normally doesn't do that. She hasn't been feeling well lately.
My dog farts way worse than
oh,
this.
Good.
That's and why I was like a sommelier. I was like, gross. Oh, this is this is manageable.
Okay, going from gross to still upsetting and horrifying. So the first enslaved people from Africa were brought to Puerto Rico in the 1500s. So that's pretty early
yeah.
in the game. And the word mafongo, they think, stems from an Angolan word, mafuenge, mafuenge.
Because
it sounds yeah. pretty darn similar.
Similar syllables there.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. And apparently it means like a huge amount of stuff.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Which I think also makes sense because yeah. of the way that fufu and mafongo are made. Just like mm-hmm. get them starches in there.
Wow. Okay, I'm liking this.
but in the New World, it's strictly made with plantains.
Right.
And the less sweet variety of yeah. plantains. And this is cool. So the Taino are the native people
yes.
of Puerto Rico.
I had a Native American studies professor who was also Taino.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's neat. So you learned a lot about them.
I did. That was the first time I learned. I was like, wow.
Yeah.
But it's like college when you're like learning knew shit for the first time. I'm like, right, there would be indigenous people in Puerto Rico.
Yeah,
I didn't.
If you think about it.
Yeah, right. Everywhere. How? Right. This is a great class. Wow, even the Tongva in LA.
Right. Okay. They don't talk about them so much.
No. Well, I mean, LMU pretty much.
Oh, it's their fault.
Stomped through their sacred land, Pavungna. Or no, that's closer to Long Beach. But yeah, that area by LMU is also like highly disputed too.
We're awful.
Anyway.
Humans are awful.
Sorry.
So the mechanism of making mofongo in Puerto Rico is actually made in a dish that's Taino.
Oh.
Like it's called a pilon.
Okay.
And it's kind of a mortar and pestle type situation.
Got you.
But it's like a semi-skinny, tall bowl with a base.
Right, right, right.
On it.
Right. It almost, it's like a wine bottle.
Yeah.
A top on it,
yeah.
Right.
And apparently, like, sometimes, depending on your strength, maybe someone has to, like, hold it down while you're smashing in it.
Okay.
Because, like, it'll just, like, ricochet off somewhere.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Okay. Good to know. Have a partner. Have a friend.
Right, right, right. Don't do it alone.
Yeah.
And so the difference, I think, between like Puerto Rican mofongo and mm-hmm. all the other mofongo-like dishes that are in the Caribbean, because mm-hmm. there are, like, every island nation like has a different version of it.
Right.
But the Puerto Ricans were really the ones who were like, what other ingredients can we get in here?
Let's fucking turn this thing up.
Yeah. They really went wild with it. So, and also, with the, like, traditional ingredients of it, you really get a sense of, like, the immigration patterns.
Mm.
So there's garlic.
Okay.
And pork.
Yep.
That's Spain.
Yeah. Okay. Is all garlic from Spain?
Well, I think, no, not all garlic is from Spain, but in terms of the people who...
From how it got to Puerto Rico, from the Spanish.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. They get into it. And the Spanish were the ones who brought wild pigs to the New World and just let them fly. Yeah.
Thank you for this wonderful bounty that we eat all the time now.
Plantains are originally from Asia, mm-hmm. but they went around the world in the other way. Actually, they went around the world in both ways. So they showed up in Africa by way of like India and then also Central America-ish over the Pacific.
Got you.
So that's like everyone had a hand in planting.
Yeah, gotta have them.
And as we talked about earlier, like the Dominican Republic, I think it... Okay, so my understanding of... some of the politics of the Caribbean is that, like, if one country is like, we invented this, all the other countries are like, excuse?
Right, right, right. Yeah, yeah.
But it definitely
seems... That West Indian culture.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
But it definitely seems like the Dominican Republic is like, okay, it's Puerto Rican. Fine. We know.
Oh, they conceded?
Yeah. They're like, we just really like it, okay?
Aw, that's sweet.
Yeah.
They're like, all right, Boricua, do your thing. You know, we're... Can't lie. That was you. That was all you. Is there a difference between Dominican and Puerto Rican mofongo?
No. I mean, there probably are differences between individuals who make
but
it's essentially the same. Whereas, you know, like Barbados has like a different, a slightly different one that I think is called Cuckoo.
Okay.
So it's more like Fufu.
Right.
So it's like what Fufu got filtered down to them as.
Well, then they also call Fufu Banku too, right? Or is that a different style? I know, because I remember in Ghana there was Fufu and Banku, but I don't want to sound completely ignorant and disrespect myself.
In what country?
Like in Ghanaian cuisine.
Oh.
I hear like Fufu and Banku, but I'm not sure if that they're different.
Let's see. Well, it's fermented corn and cassava. And it looks like they make it into dumplings-ish.
Oh, okay.
And it's served hot.
Yeah. Yeah, wow.
It probably serves a very similar purpose.
Yeah, yeah, because I feel that's why they're sort of referenced together. Because it's sort of the same.
Interesting. Does your dad still live there?
He doesn't live there. He goes like whenever he like has free time. He goes less because like the property laws are not always respected.
Oh, dear.
So like... You know, he has like markers like on his property, mm-hmm. but like some other dude like came through and just like knocked him over and like put his property land like deep into my dad's.
Oh.
And then was like, well, you can call the municipality. right, Matilda? you can call the municipality and sort it out, but then it's like a battle of who's going to bribe the city more.
So that like stuff seems so exhausting.
Yeah, and that's kind of where he is at. He's like, oh man, he's like it stresses him out.
Yeah,
because he really likes going there, but then he's also like doesn't want to deal with like any kind of, you know, conflict about it, because like in the town over from where his house is, there was like a village to village dispute, and they were like using dynamite as weapons against each other.
Wow.
So he was just sort of like, yeah, see, like, I don't know if I'm he's like, I might be able to sort of eat this one. But yeah, his like sort of appetite to deal with like the conflict around his property is like,
I mean, who wants to be dynamited?
No, nobody does. Yeah. Not by a guy named Lion, you know, because he's not fucking around.
If you are named Lion as an infant, you grow up really knowing that you've got big shoes to fill.
Yeah.
You got to like.
Oh, yeah.
You can't back down ever in your entire life.
And oh, my God. I mean, the toxic masculinity that must come along with that. Yes. To fulfill. I mean, I really feel for Lion, actually.
Oh, that's
I understand him.
That's a sweet way of looking at
it. You're just trying to reclaim something you lost by playing this character, Lion, and I see you. Yes, I see you too.
Yeah, Matilda wants to be the only animal seen. She's confused about a human being named Lion.
I know. Such a sweet dog. Whenever I hear her like referenced on the show, I'm always like, oh, I'm getting to meet the dog.
Yeah, and you finally did. Look at you guys. You're both. Oh.
Is that good?
Yes.
Oh, good. You high-fived me. Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
So where can people find you on social media and what have you?
Oh, wow. Oh.
If you want them to.
Yeah, no, I was just thinking about it. No, I was just lamenting. I was having such a good time talking about Mofongo. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Miles of Gray. That's M-I-L-E-S, not that off-brand M-Y-L-E-S nonsense. Mm-hmm. It is G-R-A-Y, not E-Y. I've had people like hit me with the most wild misspellings. And I don't like it.
I remember last time I was on your show, mm-hmm. and Jack called me Catherine Spears, and then I said my Twitter, and he like turned purple.
Yeah, he like he turned to dust. And then afterward, he was like, "Oh man, I really fucked that up."
Really?
Yeah.
That's so sweet. He's only the 5,000th person who's mispronounced my name. It's fine.
I mean, he pays attention to detail. So if he's caught out, that's just like his brand is like detail. So when he overlooks that, he'll just be like, oh no. One thing I could have done.
Oh,
yeah.
What a sweetie.
And then I think he was also felt like he's like, oh, I wish he'd said something up top. I feel so dumb. I went the whole show. And then I find out that I'm like, hey, look, it's hard. You look at it, you're like, is it a push? I don't know. I can see it both ways.
What are you going to do?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then check out my daily news and politics culture podcast, The Daily Zeitgeist with Jack O'Brien.
Yes.
Who's formerly of cracked.com.
I can second that because it is a good show.
Yeah. And you've always been a great guest.
Oh my God. Thank you. I like it even when I'm not the guest.
Yeah. Oh.
Isn't that something?
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. I like the way you control it.